This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. We are here Monday through Friday from noon to 1. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. Our first guest on Mondays, almost always, is Elise Glink. Today is no exception. Hi, Elise. Welcome back.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
She is the real estate and financial wellness expert, the owner of Think Glink Media, and also the author of a book called 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. So let's start with... Where's the story? I just had it in my hand. Here it is. The rate at which loans are exiting forbearance keeps accelerating. And I've heard more people talk about this off the air than I have on the air. And I've been reading more articles about what's going to happen when forbearance ends for people. Are you looking at this too, Elise?
Of course. And the good news is that when we first started off and everything was in an uproar a year ago with the pandemic, nearly 10% of people who have mortgages went into forbearance. They couldn't make those mortgage payments. And we saw these forbearance programs just be offered broadly to basically everybody who had a federally backed loan, which is the vast majority of them. The good news is a year later, we have about just half, less than 5% now of people with loans are in forbearance, and it's declining rapidly, and that's really good news.
What happened to the people that held the notes? What happened to the landlords? What happens to, I don't know, whoever lent these people the money in the case of homeowners? If people, because there's also a program to forgive people who can't pay their rent, let alone forbearance on a mortgage, what happens to the people that are due the money in all of these cases?
Right. There was a tremendous amount of financial support provided by the government for those federal loans. And so the government gave money to the investors to help with that. But in some cases, the investors took a big, you know, pay cut themselves. Everybody got a little bit of the pain. In terms of the landlords, there's tremendous amount of rental support that's out there right now for people who can't afford it. But the good news is that more and more people are able to make those mortgage payments, and they're able to make the rent payments either because they've gone back to work or they've gotten some help or the landlord has cut them a break. There's been, or they're not paying other bills, so they're paying their rent and their mortgage. So this is good news from a housing standpoint.
I'm reading here the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau proposed a new policy that would bar foreclosures until 2022.
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm interested in your thoughts on that. I think that's what I was also referring to a minute ago, that in the case of people who, although is this for homeowners or would this be for people that are renting? I guess foreclosures, that would be for homeowners, right?
It's for homeowners or in some cases landlords as well who own federally backed mortgages. And have federally backed mortgages. So right now we've been in a eviction forbearance, right? If you're renting, you can't get evicted. And if you are owning a home and you can't pay, you're not supposed to be foreclosed upon. And that's been for federally backed mortgages. They haven't been able to do that with the states have been able to sort of cut off foreclosures on a state-by-state level. In some places it's going through, in some places it isn't. But by just postponing all of this another full year, they're giving everybody time to get back up and caught up. Now, your other part of your question was interesting. What happens when you come out of forbearance? And there are typically three options available to you. One is you found the money and you can pay everything you owe, and you're fine again, caught up, current, and you go on with your loan. Another option is you take the missing money, so let's say 12 months worth of payments, and you stick it on the back end of the mortgage, and you just carry on and pick up where you left off. And the third one is that you go to the lender and you say, you know what, I still can't afford this. I have a new job, but it's paying less. Can we redo this loan so that it matches, the terms match what my ability to pay? And in that case, what they do is a loan modification. They redo the loan, and then you pick up and you get going. And so a lot of these people are now starting to come out of the 12 months of forbearance. And by the way, if you are losing your job now, you can get up to 12 months of forbearance for a federally backed mortgage, basically just for asking it.
That is still an option? You can still do that? I know that was early. I thought that had lapsed. You can still get forbearance?
You still can.
We'll pick it up here in just a minute with Elise Glink. We're visiting with Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I think it was David, Elise, that was kind of in my ear saying, you know, when these forbearances end and people are unable to now pay off the accumulated debt, and this to me assumes that it would be payable up front as a lump sum rather than just tacked onto the back of a loan, that banks will foreclose on those homes and we'll have another financial crisis of some sorts. Now, you've been talking about this. How do you see the lay of the land?
Yeah, I completely disagree with David, who I think is, you know, super smart, as you know, and I've had him as a guest on when I filled in for you. But I disagree with that completely. There is such a lack of homes for sale right now, and home equity has gone up so dramatically that in almost every case that I can imagine, somebody who, let's say, wouldn't be able to get a forbearance modification to something that would be affordable should be able to turn around and just sell their house and move on. It would be, there won't be a wholesale, you know, group of foreclosures like that, you know, we saw 10, 12 years ago simply because the demand is so very strong. In fact, if you look at some of the numbers from Zillow this week, the number of listings is half of what it was a year ago at the same time. And we see demand because interest rates are still near historic lows at basically all-time highs. People are desperate to buy homes. So that's a good situation for home sellers to be in.
Talk to me about universal child care and what's on the horizon for this in this country.
It's sort of interesting. There's been a lot of talk about having some sort of universal basic income, but one of the things that has come out of the recession and the pandemic is that almost 2.5 million women have dropped out of the workforce. They just literally are no longer in the workforce compared to under 2 million men who left the labor force. And the reason for that is obviously that women are caring for children primarily who are not in school or daycare and are going to school from home. And so Columbia University and the National Women's Law Center did a research study, and they found that a universal child care system, so one that provides affordable, reliable child care from birth to age 13, would help so many of these out-of-work moms get back in the workforce, and that would allow them to dramatically increase their lifetime of earnings, which is crucial for retirement. And, of course, women typically live longer than men. Women will typically be the single family household, head of household, you know, with young children. So all of this could really help them earn more and earn over a longer period of time.
I wonder how that works, universal child care, right? Like if you have a child up to a certain age, do you get a tax deduction? Do you get a check? Do you go someplace for free? Is it capped by income? Do you have any idea of how that would be structured?
I think it could happen in all of those different ways. Maybe there's a voucher system where you can go to certain places and the government will pay up to X amount. Just making it available and helping women find a way to pay for that would be tremendous. You know, there's been a Head Start has, which is an organization that focuses on sort of 0 to 5 years old, you know, educating kids 0 to 5 years old and sort of socializing them and developing their reading skills and all the rest. You know, there's a huge amount of research behind this that shows you that the sooner that, you know, children are getting this kind of extra help, the better readers they are, the better at math they are. Mm-hmm. My sister Phyllis actually is very involved in early childhood development and has been quoting this research at me for, you know, many, many years. And it's just a wonderful thing. So to be able to do two things, you're killing two birds with one stone, right? You're getting kids the kind of help that they need to be smarter and better developed educationally and intellectually, and you're giving moms the chance to go to work. It seems like a good value.
Well, there is universal child care. It's just very expensive, which isn't what they have in mind when they talk about universal child care, because then it's not universal. Not everybody can afford the kind of child care that we're talking about, both for the child's sake and to liberate the wage earner. And then there's some people, right, Elise, who say, okay, I can afford it, but at the end of the day, I'm going to not have hardly any money left. Child care can be very expensive as well.
That's all true. I would also point out, though, that universal child care isn't always available everywhere. and not easily accessible. So for people who don't have cars, for example, if it's not in walking distance, that might make it very difficult to drop off your kid and then get back to work. Also, in a number of states, including some places in Illinois, preschool really isn't full day. It might be just 2 hours, and kindergarten isn't full day. Oftentimes, it's just half day. And then you have to add on to those public school options or public options. You have to find other places for your kid to go while you're actually in your work. So I'm not sure it's quite as universal as it could be.
Yeah, maybe not as universal as I made it sound. You can tell I don't have a two-year-old right now. Did the pandemic exacerbate this, or would we be having this conversation even if we didn't go through COVID?
We would not. We should have had it, but we aren't. And the reason we're having it now, of course, is that, you know, in December, virtually all of the job losses were women. They're the ones who have experienced the brunt of this. And Black and Hispanic women are now experiencing unemployment levels that are almost twice as high as they were before the pandemic started. And so, you know, Black women, Hispanic women, women of color are really specifically feeling this, but white women are as well. It's just a policy that if, you know, you've got kids who are at home going to school online, somebody's got to monitor that and help those kids. And typically it's been the women, and they've just not been able to manage everything that they have to do and get their job done.
Jerome Powell says the economy's at an inflection point. The Dow is off a little bit today, about 100 points. What else is catching your mind?
Well, I'm really excited about some of the things that Jerome Powell said and things that the Federal Reserve has said over the last couple of weeks, which is that we are starting to see a real pickup in the economy. I believe it was Jerome Powell who said that he thinks that we may actually grow at about a 7% mm-hmm. rate in this country, which is crazy high. We haven't seen that maybe since World War II. I don't know. I haven't gone back that far. But it's a superior level of work. And if that's true, it would get a lot of people who are still on the sidelines, who have been unemployed now for a year, which is really dangerous in terms of long-term unemployment, and pull them back into the workforce. It's the kind of, you know, big push that would really allow so many people to get new jobs, to be engaged. I also read over the weekend that Southwest is calling back all of its flight attendants. They see a huge upswing in travel, and that's great news for everybody in the hospitality world.
Wasn't it United that's going to hire several thousand more pilots? So that can't be a bad sign.
No, it's a good sign. We're also seeing planes get bought, contracts get done. So for Boeing, that's pretty good too. I think the whole hospitality industry is really about to just start to take off again as people get their shots and they feel better about it. I actually have planned my first trip for mid-May, which is great, and my second trip for July. So, you know, you got to get on a plane at some point in time.
Elise Glink, real estate financial wellness expert, owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves, author of 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask, all at thinkglink.com. Thanks, Elise. We'll talk next Monday.
Thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi again, it's John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Jim Dahlke frequently joins us on Mondays at this time from Chicago Inno. Hi, Jim. Welcome back.
Hey, John. Great to be here. Thanks for having me again.
I'm just kind of chuckling at this description of the Keurig-like machine for cocktail making described as the Peloton of home cocktails. I guess that made me laugh because Peloton is like exercise, physical fitness. Home cocktails, not so much. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so this is a company called Bartesian, and they launched a few years ago based here in Chicago. And really kind of what they set out to do was create a Keurig coffee-like experience, but for cocktails. So they've created pods similar to how you make your coffee with the Keurig, but you know, they've got the exact amount of bitters and extracts and juice concentrates you need for specific types of cocktails. So think margarita, gin martini, Long Island iced tea. You provide your own booze, so you put the alcohol in there, and they are able to kind of create sort of a restaurant quality cocktails right from your kitchen counter. You know, they like to sort of position themselves as the the Peloton of home cocktails, you know, really kind of this premium product that you can sort of enjoy from home. But yeah, I think that, you know, certainly the appropriate comparison for them, right, is the Keurig machine, right? So definitely interesting to kind of see their growth. Just last week, they raised $20 million in new funding. Got some pretty big investors behind them. Don Thompson, the former McDonald's CEO, his fund Cleveland Avenue led the round. Tom Ricketts is also an investor, as well as Beam Suntory. So definitely some big names backing Bartesian. You know, there's also a B2B component, right? So getting these machines into stadiums and other sort of live venues that allow you know, venues to create cocktails really quickly. So, you know, they launched and really gained traction early from actually landing on Oprah's favorite things list a few years ago. And so ever since then, it really kind of continued to skyrocket.
I'm not sure if these are the ones that we were selling here on WGN Radio about a year ago or so. It was a Keurig-like machine. I know Rokan, when he would do his 5 o'clock cocktail, would they had one, for crying out loud, and it was a not small, insignificant piece of hardware. It wasn't super large, but it was heavy. It seemed like it was well manufactured, and it was not inexpensive either, as I recall. What do these things go for?
So the device retails for $350. So yeah, I mean, you're paying a pretty good price for it. And like any kind of, you know, kitchen countertop device, it takes up real estate in your kitchen, right? So it's got to be something that, you know, you're planning to use on a semi-regular or regular basis.
And if they've been in business for a while, I presume last year was good for them, right? Because people couldn't get restaurant quality cocktails at restaurants.
That's exactly right. With bars closed, people at home, the company says last year they saw almost 1,000% year-over-year revenue growth. Yeah. So big time growth, right? With fewer places to go, but people still interested in that kind of, you know, after work, afternoon cocktail. Yeah, the pandemic certainly benefited their business last year.
I wonder, do you think that there's a ceiling to that thing? I mean, folks are going back to the restaurants. I wonder what the future for this machine is.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a really big opportunity in the B2B stuff, especially as, you know, you're getting, you know, into more live venues. I think there's a really interesting opportunity for them to grow that side of the business. And so we'll see kind of how their growth is in terms of getting into venues. They say it's definitely a part of their roadmap. You know, it's a very kind of quick and easy way to make a cocktail, like less human-to-human contact, right? Sort of just pressing a button and putting the pod in there rather than sort of mixing a drink, you know, with your hands. So I think there's a big opportunity for the B2B stuff for them.
Yeah, maybe that's the world going forward. I like the idea of mixing it by hand or having somebody do that. I suppose this would be quicker. Talk to me about this cannabis firm that does marketing and compliance. Is that a Chicago-based company?
Yeah, that's right. So this startup is called Philo, based here in Chicago, and really they have kind of caught fire in the growing legal cannabis space, both locally and across the country. They raised about $30 million last week, and what they do is help cannabis firms with marketing and compliance. So, you know, when you are a cannabis firm, you are kind of very held to very strict regulations in terms of where your advertising can appear, making sure that it, you know, only is advertised within, you know, legal jurisdictions, is only being showed online digitally to folks who are of age. And so there's a lot of hoops and complexities that cannabis firms have to jump through to make sure that their ads are being sent and viewed by, you know, a legal audience. And so Philo is able to help companies do that. So they've really caught fire recently, working with a lot of cannabis firms like Columbia Care and Grassroots Cannabis here locally, for example. But they actually believe that their software can help companies beyond the marijuana space, sort of looking at other highly regulated industries that can use the same type of marketing tech. So, you know, Chicago, long been a marketing hub, a marketing tech, a pillar across the country. Now the cannabis space also catching up with that, and feel really being a big piece of that.
The idea of is intriguing, isn't it? How do you market marijuana? How do you stay within the bounds of the law and also the bounds of good taste? That's kind of an interesting space, isn't it?
It is. And these firms can get dinged heavily if they're not in compliance, right? So, I mean, there are, you know, big stakes at play if your ads are not being delivered legally and in a regulated way. So big opportunity, I think, for Philo.
Hey, speaking of quantum mechanics, let's talk a little bit about this. Here's a headline. The first U.S. accelerator for quantum startups launches in Chicago. Catch us up on that, Jim.
Yeah, so just last week, the University of Chicago announced that it's launched a new accelerator called Duality, and it is an accelerator program designed specifically for startups operating in and around a quantum science and technology. This is the first such accelerator program in the country. There's no other quantum tech startup accelerators in the U.S. So big one from Chicago. The University of Chicago is investing a minimum of $20 million in the project over the next decade. And, really this comes as Chicago continues to sort of position itself as a leader in quantum tech and research. Just last year, the U.S. Department of Energy established 5 new national quantum centers across the U.S., and 2 of those 5 are actually in the Chicago area at Argonne and Fermilab. Both of those projects are going to get about $115 million over the next 5 years as part of the initiative. So a lot of quantum energy happening in Chicago, and what this accelerator is going to do is kind of take some of that research and early stage activity that's happening at the lab stage and help bring it to market. And, you know, a lot of city leaders believe that Chicago is really poised to be a leader in sort of this next generation technology. And as quantum continues to grow, Chicago thinks it's got a big role to play.
And when you say quantum, do you mean quantum physics, or are you using quantum in some sort of other sense, like economic or whatever?
Yeah, quantum physics and just, you know, really, really high-powered computing. I think that's, you know, sort of the simplest way to put it. You know, really, really fast computing, really, 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 high-tech computing that really is going to be kind of the backbone, I think, of the next technology wave. And so, you know, Chicago down at the south side of University of Chicago, really thinking it can play a really big influential role in that.
Yeah, I was thinking of the U of C when you mentioned that. Jim Dahlke, senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Okay, Jim, let's talk next week. Thanks for your expertise and time.
Thanks, John.
1245 WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Cranes is out with its 100 Best Places to Work list. It partnered with Best Companies Group to survey employees about things like flexible hours, 401k matches, and health benefits. Among small companies, advertising and PR company Blue Dog Design in the Fulton Market neighborhood topped the survey. Among mid-sized companies, the West Loop advertising and PR company All Campus came in at number one. Among large companies, the Lyle-based staffing company Populous Group was tops. The companies also have something else in common. At least 30% of their executives are women. Suburban medical supplies company Medline Industries is exploring a sale. Blackstone Group, KKR & Company, and Carlyle Group are among those expected to consider bids. The Northfield-based Medline could sell for as much as $30 billion. The company has hired Goldman Sachs to run the process, which is reportedly at an early stage. There is no guarantee the company will actually be sold. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
More business news with Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. It sounds like it's going to be drying out and warming up a little bit this week. And if you're itching to get out there and dig in the dirt and plant some things, our gardening guru, Jim Fizell, has a few pointers. I know a lot of us are wondering if when it's safe to plant tomatoes. Is it that time yet, Jim?
Well, not really. Tomatoes really need to be planted by about Memorial Day. That's a little bit early for those things. But there are some things that can go out. Hardy woody plants, you can start planting things like shrubs or rose bushes. Also, there are some kinds of garden plants. Spade the garden over and get rid of any clumps. You can put out pansies. You can also plant glads and tuberous begonias or dahlias, because these are not going to come up from the bulbs for some time. And by the time they come up, the weather will be mild enough. But onion sets, asparagus, rhubarb, even lettuce and spinach can be put out. Potatoes. And there's some things you can seed in the garden, too, like peas and radishes. Now, moisture has been a little bit short in the last several weeks. We didn't have very much moisture in that snow that we had. But we're beginning to get rain now. If we don't get continuing rain and you put stuff out, be sure that you water it so it gets a good start.
Yep. Thanks as always to Mr. Fizz, gardening expert Jim Fizzell at the Chicago Board of Trade. May corn, bean, and wheat futures finished out last week at record high. Well, the highest they've been since 2013 anyway. Today, though, all three are off about 1.5%. Beans are down 22 cents, 13.81. Corn is down about 8 cents, 5.68. Wheat is trading about 9 cents lower at 6.29. And at the Merck, hogs are even. Cattle right now are lower. From the farm to your belly, today we celebrate, National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day. Huh? Meanwhile, some more food news. Cat owners have another option, Made by Nacho. It's a new brand prepared by Chef Bobby Flay, and his cat, Nacho, features cage-free chicken, grass-fed beef, sustainably sourced salmon, balanced with pumpkin and cranberries, blueberries, and kale. I would like to say that ingredient is honor of our very own Mr. Cat and his love for kale, but that's probably not true. That's the business of food and Mr. Cat food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on the Business Lunch. Hi, Amy.
Hi, John. How's it going today?
Going well. Microsoft has bought a speech recognition company called Nuance. Catch us up on this story.
Yeah, this is about a $16 billion deal. So that's the second biggest deal from Microsoft since they bought LinkedIn for $26 billion in 2016. What Microsoft has really been doing lately is a lot of acquisition. They've really, really been leaning that direction. So to me, that hints that they're looking for a lot of big growth very, very quickly. They have reportedly been in talks to buy Discord, which is a chat app, for about $10 billion. Last year, they tried to buy TikTok, at least the U.S. business part of TikTok, for $30 billion. That deal didn't ultimately go through. Last month, they got gaming company ZeniMax for $7.6 billion. So, you know, we're looking at a lot of acquisition effort going on for Microsoft. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch Microsoft over the next several quarters to see what they're doing with this acquisition growth and how they're using it. Nuance, though, is so interesting because what they do to transcribe speech. So that's doctor's visits, customer service calls, voicemails, like all kind of stuff like that. To give that technology, to pull that technology into Microsoft's, you know, wheelhouse, that's potentially, you know, quite a big win for them.
I think that technology is something we take for granted. It is amazing.
Yeah.
And then if you said, now transcribe the complicated words and phrases at a doctor's office, sometimes not said perfectly well, that's amazing if they can do that.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, if you think about just how your voicemails get transcribed, sometimes there's kind of hilarious little mistakes in there in the transcription, just the way people pronounce words. Add in medical terminology or legal terminology, customer service technology that has very brand-specific wording in it. And it's really quite a feat. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see what Microsoft does with this. I also think the acquisition of ZeniMax is pretty interesting, having acquired this gaming company. $7.6 billion is a pretty sizable investment. So, you know, there's a lot of money in the gaming industry. It'll be interesting to see how that works with Microsoft.
Rideshare for people who need a vaccine. Catch us up there.
Yeah. So PayPal. I don't know why I said Walmart. PayPal, Uber, and Walgreens, not Walmart. They have launched an $11 million fund to give free rides to people who don't have access to transportation to get their vaccine. It's called the Vaccine Access Fund, and it is managed by a nonprofit called Local Initiative Support Corporation. People can donate to this. Any person in the world can just donate money to this through PayPal or by using the Uber app. But they've said they're also looking for other corporate donors to make more sizable contributions to it. And they said that this is part of the Biden administration saying, hey, we want companies to get involved in the pandemic response and do what you can to make this go better and quicker for people. And so this is what they've teamed up to do. 11 million of that is, you know, that's a pretty sizable amount to get people to vaccine appointments. Now, Uber had already been doing some of this. They had already had allocated some funds to get people to vaccine appointments who may not have access to get there. And so, but 11 million certainly is increasing that quite a bit.
I hear from listeners a lot between 9 and noon. Not a lot, but we heard from a few last week who were frustrated that for people who don't have their own car, they can't get to the vaccine if they can get one. How do I get the shot? If this satisfies that, I'm happy to hear it. And Lou Malnati's last Friday, at least it was reported, maybe for sale for $700 million.
Yeah, that's right. So Bloomberg has reported this, and they're reporting off of some people involved in this that spoke on the condition of anonymity. So, of course, this could change. But what has been reported is that backers of Lou Malnati's are looking at options, including a sale. That could also be, that could mean adding a shareholder, that could mean a lot of different things, but the company could be valued as much as $700 million, including debt. We'll see what that means, what that could possibly mean for that company. It might not mean, you know, much of anything for people who go to Lou Malnati's, who order from there. It might be business as usual, but it could also mean a great deal of expansion or, you know, depending on who, if they add a partner, if they add a shareholder, that could have a corporate interest for expansion, something like that. So I think that's going to be an interesting to watch, one to watch in the next few weeks and months.
Let's keep talking about that. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.